The Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism, Max Weber. The main question of Weber's text is, how did Protestant ethics influence the spirit of capitalism? This central dilemma responds to the cultural debates of Weber's time. Weber helps to define and explain his early 20th century culture by tracing the influence of religious thought on capitalist values. Overall, he makes a historical argument for the importance of religion in contributing to capitalist culture. In particular, Weber focuses on traditional Protestant ethics and the modern spirit of capitalism. He defines these ethics by explaining how Protestants differ from Catholics. Among other differences, Protestants believe that working hard should be valued for its own sake. This meant that more Protestants were motivated to apply themselves to their secular professions than Catholics were. Weber also defines the spirit of capitalism as a motivation to work hard and save money, not in order to survive, but in order to make a profit. Throughout this text, he will show how Protestant emphasis on hard work helped to shape this capitalist fixation on generating profit for profit's sake. The core of Weber's argument is that the spirit of capitalism is an attitude that regards work as an end in and of itself. He believes the capitalist spirit extends in opposition to traditionalism, a system in which people worked only hard enough to get by. The capitalist spirit is different because it motivates people to work simply because they believe hard work is important. Someone driven by the capitalist spirit does not find motivation in survival, but rather in profit. This kind of attitude can be seen in its earliest form among Protestants, even though they did not technically structure their society around what we know today as the capitalist system. In other words, the form of their society was not capitalist, but Weber argues their attitude was. For example, the Protestants generally rejected excessive spending or indulgence. The Protestant worker that was most focused on structuring his life around ever more hard work. Weber's text moves from a more general statement of these definitions into a more specific discussion of different Protestant denominations and their particular religious beliefs. He shows how these different belief systems can be connected to their capitalist spirit of his day. For example, he discusses the idea of predestination as defined by the Calvinist. This belief that God determined everyone's fate before they even began their lives on earth gave Calvinists an individualist attitude, since they felt that they could not rely on anyone but themselves when it came to their salvation. Weber connects this individualism to a drive to work hard and make a personal profit. Of course, such a fixation on profit would go on to be important in the capitalist spirit as well. Weber connects the spirit of capitalism primarily to the Protestant concept of asceticism, and contrasts this with the original Catholic take on asceticism. In general, asceticism refers to the strict and restrictive type of lifestyle. Protestants were known to order their entire lives this way, in both secular and religious spheres, because they believed that the carefully structured lifestyle was most pleasing to God. Catholics, on the other hand, mostly applied this concept to their religious lives only. For example, monks were known to limit their lives when it came to alcohol, food, sex, and anything considered an indulgence. In general, Catholics also believe that good deeds should be performed mainly for the sake of making up for bad deeds. Protestants were more consistent in striving to work hard and do good deeds day to day because they believed that one's salvation needed constantly to be proven. Unlike Catholics, Protestants did not think that they could make up for a past bad deed, which spurred them to avoid such bad deeds in the first place. The dichotomy between Catholics' individual, as-needed application of this work ethic and Protestants' constant collective work ethic is an important one throughout the text. Weber contrasts Catholics with Protestants to reinforce his point that it was the Protestant work ethic in particular that helped to shape modern capitalism. Weber's analysis of Calvinism, Baptism, Methodism, Pietism, and Puritanism gives more detail showing how Protestant asceticism is connected to their capitalist spirit. Above all, he emphasizes the importance of Calvinism and Baptism. These were the two most distinctive denominations, meaning they differed most from one another and thus had the most unique and important contributions to the capitalist spirit. Calvinists were unique in that they believed in predestination. This belief led Calvinists to work hard for two somewhat contradictory reasons. On one hand, they needed to distract themselves from the question of salvation by keeping occupied. On the other hand, they had to demonstrate to themselves that God had chosen them, and they believed this could be proven by dedication to hard work and resulting good fortune. Taken together, these two approaches spurred the Calvinists to be particularly dedicated workers. Baptists, meanwhile, contributed the idea that one's conscience was a sign from God. This belief led them to emphasize honesty in their work ethic. According to Weber, the value of honest work continues to exist among those with capitalist spirit today. Weber concludes by noting that this text is only a preliminary study. He calls for further analysis of religious beliefs and the ways in which they contributed to secular life. In his time, studying the influence of religion on non-religious sectors of society was not regarded as a serious pursuit. Weber, however, believes that spiritual explanations, such as the one linking Calvinist belief in predestination with capitalist individualism, have a lot to offer to the field of social ethics. His text makes the case that religious influences should be noted alongside a more secular or material interpretation of history. Evaluations. On the plus side, Weber's theory of social change recognizes that we need to take account of individual motivations for action in order to understand massive social structural changes. On the negative side, critics have pointed out that the emergence of capitalism doesn't actually correlate that well with Protestantism. There are plenty of historical examples of capitalist systems that have emerged in non-Protestant countries, such as Italian mercantilism a couple of centuries earlier. Bureaucracy. Max Weber was the first to use and describe the term bureaucracy. He believed bureaucracy was the most efficient way to set up an organization, administration, and organizations. Max Weber believed that bureaucracy was better than traditional structures. In a bureaucratic organization, everyone is treated equally and the division of labor is clearly described for each employee. What is bureaucracy? Bureaucracy definition. Bureaucracy is an organizational structure that is characterized by many rules, standardized processes, procedures and requirements, number of desks, meticulous division of labor and responsibility, clear hierarchies and professional, almost impersonal interactions between employees. According to the bureaucratic theory of Max Weber, such a structure was indispensable in large organizations in structurally performing all tasks by a great number of employees. In addition, in a bureaucratic organization, selection and promotion only occur on the basis of technical qualifications. Bureaucratic theory and legal responsibility. According to bureaucratic theory of Max Weber, three types of power can be found in organizations: traditional power, charismatic power, and legal power. He refers in his bureaucratic theory to the latter as a bureaucracy. All aspects of a democracy are organized on the basis of rules and laws, making the principle of established jurisdiction prevail. The following three elements support bureaucratic management. All regular activities within a bureaucracy can be regarded as official duties. Management has the authority to impose rules. Rules can be easily be respected on the basis of established methods. What is a bureaucratic organization? According to the bureaucratic theory of Max Weber, bureaucracy is the basis for systematic formation of any organization and is designed to ensure efficiency and economic effectiveness. It is an ideal model for management and its administration to bring an organization's power structure into focus. With these observations, he lays down the basic principles of bureaucracy and emphasizes the division of labor, hierarchy, rules, and impersonal relationship. Max Weber's six characteristics of the bureaucratic theory: task specialization, or specialization and division of labor, hierarchical layers of authority, formal selection, rules and requirements, impersonal, impersonality, and personal indifference, and career orientation. Number one, task specialization. Tasks are divided into simple, routine categories on the basis of competencies and functional specializations. Every employee is responsible for what he or she does best and knows exactly what is expected of him or her. By dividing work on the basis of specialization, the organization directly benefits. Each department has specific powers. As a result, there's a delineation of tasks, and managers can approach their employees more easily when they do not stick to their tasks. Every employee knows exactly what is expected of him or her and what his or her powers are within the organization. Every employee has a specific place within the organization and is expected to solely focus on his or her area of expertise. Going beyond your responsibilities and taking on tasks of colleagues is not permitted within a bureaucracy. hierarchical layers of authority. Managers are organized into hierarchical layers, in which each layer of management is responsible for staff and overall performance. In bureaucratic organizational structures, there are many hierarchical positions. It is essentially the trademark and foundation of bureaucracy. The hierarchy of authority in a system is in which different positions are related in order of precedence, in which the highest rank on the ladder has the greatest power. The bottom layers of bureaucratic organizational structures are always subject to supervision and control of the higher layer by the higher layers. This hierarchy reflects lines of bureaucratic communication and the degree of delegation, and clearly lays out how powers and responsibilities are divided. Number 3, formal selection. All employees are selected on the basis of technical skills and competencies, which have been acquired through training, education, and experience. One of the basic principles is that employees are paid for their services, and that level of their salary is dependent on their position. Their contract terms are determined by organizational rules and requirements, and the employee has no ownership interest in the company. Number 4, rules and requirements. Formal rules and requirements are required to ensure uniformity, so that employees know exactly what is expected of them. In this sense, the rules and requirements can be considered predictable. All administrative processes are defined by the official rules. By enforcing strict rules, the organization can more easily achieve uniformity, and all employee efforts can be better coordinated. The rules and requirements are more or less stable and always formalized in so-called official reports. Should new rules and requirements be introduced, then senior management or directors are responsible for this. Number 5, impersonal. Regulations and clear requirements create distant and impersonal relationships between employees, with the additional advantage of preventing nepotism or involvement from outsiders or politics. These impersonal relationships are a prominent feature of bureaucracies. Impersonal relationships are solely characterized by a system of public law and rules and requirements. Official views are free from personal involvement, emotions, and feelings. Decisions are solely made on the basis of rational factors rather than personal factors. Career orientation. Employees of a bureaucratic organization are selected on the basis of their expertise. This helps in deployment of the right people in the right positions and thereby optimally utilizing human capital. In a bureaucracy, it is possible to build a career on the basis of experience and expertise. As a result, it offers lifetime employment. The right division of labor within a bureaucratic organization also allows employees to specialize themselves further, so that they become experts in their own field and significantly improve their performance. Advantages and disadvantages of the bureaucratic theory. Advantages. Generally speaking, the term bureaucracy has a negative connotation and is often linked to government agencies and large organizations. Nevertheless, the great benefit of bureaucracy is that large organizations with many hierarchical layers can become structured and work effectively. It is precisely the established rules and procedures that allows for high efficiency and consistent execution of work by all employees. All this makes it easier for management to maintain control and make adjustments when necessary. Bureaucracy is essentially inevitable in organizations where legislation plays an important role in delivering consistent output. Disadvantages. Bureaucracy is characterized by a large amount of red tape, paperwork, many desks, certain office culture, and slow bureaucratic communication due to its many hierarchical layers. This is the system's biggest disadvantage of a bureaucratic organization. It's also unfortunate that employees remain fairly distant from each other and the organization, making them less loyal. Bureaucracy is also extremely dependent on regulatory and policy compliance. This restricts employees to come up with innovative ideas, making them feel like just a number instead of an individual. Later research on the human relations theory demonstrated that employees appreciate attention and want to have a voice in decision-making. Bureaucratic theory problems. Because employees of a bureaucratic organization have no opportunity to voice their opinion or influence decision-making, bureaucracy may demotivate employees in the long run. Moreover, over the course of time, employees may start to get annoyed at the various rules and requirements, with the risk that they may start boycotting and/or abusing these rules and standing up to the established order. It is therefore very important that bureaucratic organizations properly inform employees well in advance about their approach to work and require them to accept this. Only employees who agree to this approach are suitable to work within a bureaucratic organization.